Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Darren Criss!
Esty Heim, yeah.
Wow.
We're back.
We really could do Riff Wars. Could be a segment. You just did. What are you talking about?
That was a lucky run.
You've been on a lucky run, Darren Criss.
But she stumbles a lot. Like, I hear stumble runs all the time that I do. Like, why did I do that? I could have just sang the note straight, and I had to do that lick. But I don't do runs.
I've only heard you bat a thousand, truly. And I feel like I've seen you perform a lot.
Lucky.
And you really, like, you just, there's no need for any bells and whistles with anything you do. You really have such a crisp, clear as a bell voice, Darren Criss.
I appreciate
that.
I truly admire. But you know as well as I do, those takes or those shows, those nights where you go, oops. Really biffed that one. And then you look at all the phones that are recording you and you're like, I really hope they don't upload those to the internet. Like, what, you know this. Like, what's the worst show you've ever played? Like, you know, what's the time you go, I really biffed it on that one? Because I have a whole list.
This is for me, not you. And I've always said this. I think that the audience actually likes when you mess up. Because that's what makes the show that they've seen special. I know that when I see live music and the band will stop the song and be like, no, we have to do that again or something like that. That's like, for better or for worse, I remember that as like, oh, I was there when blah, 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 forgot the words to their hit song and had to start it over again.
Yeah, but that's endearing. That's like an aw moment. But I'm talking about like singing a song that people know and then you just like totally fuck the landing. And everybody knows it and everybody feels it, but you got to keep going. That kind of thing. You're like, ooh, all right.
When I do that, I'm self-aware enough at the end of the song to be like, well, that was pretty shitty.
Yeah, no, I do that as well. But when you see that shit on the internet, because I have a list of my least favorite performances of myself where I really blew it, that I want to, because, you know, I'm the guy that wants to comment, like, this dude sounds like shit, because the clip cuts off always right before the part where I went, guys, I didn't sound very good. I screwed that up. But now it exists on the internet, devoid of that context and that follow-up that I have, like, I want to go, like, I need to go to those people who have those videos and own up to it and say, I just want you to know that I know this is subpar.
Or just ask them to upload the rest of the video. Shit.
Yeah. But that would be too convenient.
Give the people some context.
Oh, man. I know. One of these days, maybe I'll make a list and let our listeners know which ones they are. So at least they know what my standards are.
Well, there's a lot. I think that I think I'm too self-aware enough to let shit like that slide within myself. So, but I also think that that's, you know, that's, again, I'm definitely not batting 1,000 when it comes to my performances. But again, you know, no one asked, you know, what's his face? Who painted A Starry Night?
Van Gogh?
Yeah. No one asked Van Gogh to play. No, like, no one asked him to, you know, paint A Starry, Starry Night again every single night. Could he have painted A Starry, Starry Night every night exactly the way that the painting?
That's true.
Do you know what I mean?
No, I like that. You're absolutely right. I love that idea that, yeah, if you're an artist, like having to replicate the same thing, it's not going to always be the same thing. Yeah, you can't.
It's not going to be exactly the same, and it's not going to be perfect, and it's not going to be exactly the way. That's the beauty and the curse of live performances.
Also
what I love so much about it is like it's a moment in time. It happens, and now people are able to capture it on their phones, and that's, you know, just kind of par for the course now. But
I do love that idea that you have to like create the, you know, I think I'd made this joke with you before when one of our non-recorded conversations, but when you guys played the Grammys, something occurred to me that occurs to me anytime a person who's nominated has to perform, where it's so unfair because so the Oscars, you did this thing like conceivably a year ago, if not more.
Right.
You're done. You just get to show up, look as good as you can, and you don't have to do anything other than just be there.
Yeah.
As opposed to like the Tonys and the Grammys where it's like not only you're nominated, you got to do the thing. And so I always thought it'd be funny if like Meryl Streep is nominated for an Oscar again for the millionth time.
Right.
They have to go, and now a scene, a monologue. Right.
A monologue.
From Meryl Streep. And she has to go up and do it in costume and hair and makeup. And she actually has to do the fucking thing. Like, that is...
I wish.
That is
I
so tough that,
that
you have to do
happen.
That. I know. It'd be fair, right? Like, at the Tonys,
yes.
I'll never forget. Like, I'll sit next to somebody who's nominated for an award. They will, especially for the ladies, like, they go to the red carpet, they have their hair and makeup done, they have their outfit for the red carpet. Then they sit down, and then somewhere during the show, they got to go backstage, get into new hair and makeup for another thing, perform the thing in front of everybody in real time, work their fucking ass off, then get back into their outfit, sit back down, and have the Tony people say, and the Tony does not go to you.
Right. Oh.
Like, what? What a nightmare, dude.
Oh.
That is such a tough rap. Like, these people work their asses off. So anyway, yes, that is funny. It'd be funny if, like, every time you saw Starry Night, you had to watch Van Gogh actually make it in front
yeah.
of you.
And make it exactly the way that it was the first time.
And people are like, oh, it's not like the one I like. It's not like
right.
the NFT I have.
Yeah, well, one of these days we'll get into the nitty gritty of NFTs because I find it fascinating / questionable. I don't know. I actually don't know how I feel.
It's still
about
the Wild West. Speaking of nitty gritty, let's get into the nitty gritty of the first episode. What'd you think of it? How'd you like it?
You know, I got a phone call from my father who listened to it. He said two things. First thing he said was, Darren Criss is very smart. That was out the gate, first thing he said. Second thing he said was, I don't know if I wanted to know about you losing your virginity.
Yeah, that's you actually were vague about it. We kind of danced around it without saying anything,
yeah.
I think, from what I recall, that would make
yes.
a parental unit nervous, I think.
I think it's
your
more
dad.
Like,
what do I know?
Right. I do think in general, I know when I'm a parent, I'm probably going to feel the same way. I'm probably not going to want to know about that. I'm going to want to be open to talking about that whenever my future child comes to me with questions or concerns or anything. I'm going to be very much open to talking about it. However, it's not going to be something that I am actively going to anticipate and want to know about. Do you know what I mean?
Well, just remember everything that we're saying here, like your kids and your kids' kids, they can all listen to this. So just make sure whatever you say now, that's terrifying.
Dear future
back to being
children.
About what I say.
Dear future children.
It was fun listening to it. I thought of all the things, you know, like the best quip you could have thought of after the fact. I thought of a bunch of them. The first episode, I was really trying to find... I could hear my nervousness, honestly. I was hearing the weight of me going, wow, anybody can listen to this at any time forever and ever, so I better say shit right. So the words were escaping me. The word that our producer Terrence helped me out with that I was looking for when I was talking about like a calling, like a theological calling, was
right.
vocation. Vocation.
Oh,
was
talk
the
about
word
an
I was
SAT
looking
word.
For. Yeah, so that was the one. So I needed to get that off my chest. I found the word. You know, another thing I didn't say in the last interview, because I talked about Peter Coyote, and I realized that, you know, I was talking about his history in San Francisco and about how he was like a really big contributor to avant-garde theater. To make it more accessible to our listeners and more importantly to SD Haim, Peter Coyote is the dad of Mandy Moore in A Walk to Remember. And and also he is the guy that comes at the end of E.T. to Elliot and says like, he came to me too. So those are two pretty, in my book,
Whoa.
Seminal appearances that I failed to mention that, yes, he's an iconic San Francisco guy, but also he's done some pretty fucking huge movies. So there you go. That's
crazy.
I want to give him a shout out. Yeah. That's
wow. Tell Peter?
Peter Coyote, man. What a
Peter
G.
Coyote. Let's Ledge. Get him on the horn. Let's get him on the pod.
He's like a Buddhist monk now. So he's got loads to
talk
about.
That's so interesting. Let's talk
yeah,
about it.
He's cool.
Peter.
And also his voice, he's a voiceover guy. He's been doing like he was the voice of like the Oscars for years. So he has one of these really sexy sultry.
Whoa.
He's got a voice for podcasts. That's for goddamn sure.
Well, I have a face for one. So wackety
schmackety. Wap, wap, wap. Waka waka waka.
Wackety schmackety But let's get into this week's guest. We have the lovely, the amazing Maya Rudolph. I don't know if our listeners know this, but both Darren and I are very big fans of Maya Rudolph. I've been lucky enough to spend time with her and her family, and we've become friends over the years, and I still kind of have to pinch myself every time I get a text from her or a call from her, because I think, you know, Darren and I, we talk about this all the time, but we get not starstruck, but I think we feel like we've been let into this club where we don't necessarily know whether or not we truly should be a member of said club, but we are a part of it.
But she's varsity. You know, she's got the varsity jacket. She's the cool kid in high school. You know, the junior, senior, we're the underclassmen, and seeing her as somebody that you've always wanted to, I don't know, she has an oeuvre that you want to be a part of, whether it's personally, you've been lucky enough to know her in real life, but as a fan, knowing her and her whole, all the things that she does is very much in line with the stuff that you and I do or seek to do as a person who does a few things. You know, she's a comedienne with two N's and an E, a musician, a true performer, a true Renaissance woman. And I had not met her. I was so excited for this interview. There's so many things I wanted to talk to her about. And I think we got into a lot of them. I mean, like, there was so much more we could have gotten into, but I could talk to her for
6 hours. I could literally talk to her forever. And she's just so, like, her life is,
I wanted to ask her about Idiocracy. I didn't do it and I forgot, but that's a movie that she's in. I mean, she's, for those of you who don't know much about Maya Rudolph, obviously her meteoric rise, I think, was really attributed to her tenure on SNL. She just recently won 2 Emmys for not only her portrayal on SNL as Kamala Harris, as Vice President Kamala Harris, but also as a voiceover actress on Big Mouth as Connie, the hormone monstrous. She's done a ton of movies. We've done, you know, from a lot of TV stuff. She comes from a big music background. You know her bands, right, Esty?
Yes, The Rentals and Princess.
And she has a background in, like, photography. She has, like, a lot of things going on that I really wanted to get into the weeds for. So that was really cool. And thank you for making that connection, because I forget how much you guys are connected.
Oh, Esty.
Like, you guys have this whole LA backstory.
Again, my sisters and I are just, we feel so lucky that we get to even say that we're friends with someone so cool and just all around just like the best human.
Is she from the Valley too?
No, she's not from the Valley, but she is from LA, and she was actually born in Gainesville, Florida.
Okay. I mean, but still,
she's coming
born
up in Florida,
you know, around music and around these folks, like, that's, I think you guys share a lot in common with having the same calling.
I discovered things that I didn't know about Maya on this interview.
Like what?
I didn't know that she wanted to be a fashion designer.
That was big. Yeah, she says that for a second. We're like, holy shit, like, that's a whole other podcast.
I mean, it makes complete sense because she has impeccable style. And, you know, she has a dream closet. She just has really, really good taste in clothing. And she just knows her shit. And, you know, we talk about fashion all the time, but I had no idea that she wanted to be a fashion designer. I would wear a Maya Rudolph frock.
Oh my God.
I wore a made by Maya frock. Yeah.
Made by Maya. I'm into it.
This interview was so eye-opening. She really is the true definition of a Renaissance woman. She's just so good at everything.
And the perfect first guest. So without further ado, let's get into it. That Thing I Do with Maya Rudolph.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Here we are. Maya, we're so excited to have you here. This is so sweet of you to join us. Thank you for doing this.
Mai, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me.
I find it very apropos that you're our first official guest. This is
Wait,
our second
really?
Episode.
I am?
Yeah, officially.
Woo! We wanted you to be the first.
I wanted you to be my first.
Well, we're breaking that. You know, here's my shitty pun that I didn't use last time, Esty, and it was a horrible missed opportunity. We're breaking our hymen.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time I've heard that one.
I just hope you've never had anyone say that to you during the act of coitus.
You know what? Yeah. I would also be lying if I didn't date men that had made that joke in like the creepiest way
in the
possible.
Heat of the moment.
I had to
yeah,
sit
that's...
there. Yeah, and I had to like sit there / lay there and just be like, yeah.
That's a deal breaker. Delete. Applesy.
Hard pass.
That's when you just press the eject button.
Eject.
Boom, abort.
Out the door.
Fully abort.
That's no fun.
Not cute.
Well, I'm glad I didn't make that joke earlier.
No, I think guys in LA just think that they're funnier than the average bear, and it's just not the truth.
That's true. I bet you're right. I didn't think about them. I mean, we grew up there, so how would I know any different? I guess you're right.
The only reason I think is because my girlfriends make me laugh more than boys that I meet in LA. Like, I laugh more with my gal pals, but I laugh a lot with boys in Britain. Like, British boys make me lol.
That's because they're like British boys. Also, are we knocking average bears? Are average bears like somewhat funny? When you said that comparison, like I was like, do bears have like a baseline of like comic ability that I'm unaware of?
Like smarter than the average bear? I said funnier than the average bear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, where did that start? Where did the average bear, did that come?
Is that from Yogi Bear? Is it smarter than the average bear?
Smarter than the average bear.
Oh yeah, okay, cool.
Hanna-Barbera?
Just wanted to clear that up before I got too confused.
Yogi wasn't known for his smarts.
Yeah.
No, he was known
shrewd.
For his picnic baskets.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he was smart. Definitely shrewd.
He had some smooth qualities for a bear.
But it was Yogi Bear, and who was his sidekick?
Boo Boo.
Boo Boo, yeah, man.
Right. Hey, Boo Boo.
I fuck with Boo Boo, dude. I always like Boo Boo, because Boo Boo always seemed to be driving the ship a little more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Yogi. He had smarts.
Do you guys go back to, like, childhood situations?
No, not at all. No, how we know each other? I will say, I'm going to circle this back as to why I'm so excited that you're the official guest, because we started our first episode interviewing each other. I'm from the Bay Area, Maya. I'm from San Francisco, and I always, even though we're both from California, me and Esty, have always been enamored with folks from Los Angeles, and not necessarily people coming from the entertainment industry, but just the proximity and sort of the amazing ecosystem of just being around
Southern California.
Just Southern California. I've always been really interested in that scene, for better or for worse.
That's nice of you, because most Bay Area folks, I found as a Southern Californian that Bay Area was like, we're good without you guys. We don't need.
Oh, it's true. It is a wildly sophomoric notion that I outgrew very quickly the second I visited LA. Where it's like,
but that's probably a protective notion because you live in such a beautiful place. You probably didn't want us to fuck it up.
I mean, I feel like that's also just like, you know, like a fun rivalry of just like, I remember my whole life, like, fuck LA, fuck the Lakers, fuck the Dodgers. And I came here and was like, oh, wait, I'm an idiot. This is lovely. I love it here. What's wrong with me?
Well, you guys kind of switched because Maya went to school.
UC Santa Cruz.
Yeah. So you guys kind of had the flippity flip of it all. you guys kind of switched places.
And then I fell in love with the Bay and like all my Bay people.
Nice. Did you ever live there? I'm from San Francisco. I've never really like done the whole, I've learned to say the Bay Area.
After we would go for fun. Santa Cruz was pretty sleepy, especially after the earthquake, because I was there from 90 to 95. Oh.
The good times.
So everything was pretty sleepy. So we would drive up to San Francisco to go have fun.
Beautiful.
And then all my friends were from San Francisco and Oakland. And all that was where like the magic was happening.
That's where it was at. I mean, so I'm going to put a pin in two things because I want to get back to something. Because we haven't had the opportunity to talk very much, Maya. I know you've talked to Esty a lot. I was saying the reason why I love that you're a first guest is because there's so many similar pathways between you and Esty, both being from Los Angeles, having a background in music and performing and acting, and kind of, you know, I think all of us being gypsies, we kind of just grab onto whatever train takes us somewhere. And it's always an interesting conversation to find out why and how we ended up where we are when there were several different like doors we could have opened or hoped would open for us, I should say. But I'm going to go back for a second back to Santa Cruz, because this is something that I've always liked talking to artists about that did go to college, and which isn't necessarily indicative of having a career. I'm not saying that's like the end all and be all. But Esty got her major in ethnomusicology, or you studied ethnomusicology.
I studied music, Esty? Yeah.
You studied music. Now, for a lot of people, if you're listening to this and you are thinking about going to college or you are in college, you've probably heard a lot of people say your major doesn't fucking matter, which I think is just as reductive as telling a teenager that their problems won't matter when they're older. You don't want to hear that at the time.
Right.
So I don't want to say that. However, it is fascinating to me that, correct me if I'm wrong, you majored in photography.
Yeah.
In Santa Barbara. Now, excuse me, Santa Cruz. Now, I have to ask about this because you have so many skill sets that you are now known for. And I want to know if that ties into anything that you still do. Do you still have an interest in photography? Because that's 4 years of telling people that's your major, going to all the classes, doing all the fucking paperwork.
Right.
So surely there must be something there. So I just have to ask, why photography, and does it still exist in your mind?
There is something there, and I'm glad you called me Shirley.
Thank you for referencing that.
I definitely like the path led to photography, and at the end I was like, fuck it, photography, that's great. But it was definitely in visual arts. At Santa Cruz, I was at Porter College, which is the arts college. Like, there's no question that I was definitely helicoptering it, but I was a showman through and through, and there was no reason for me to, I should have, like, I wanted, in my heart of all hearts, I wanted to go to New York, and I wanted to go to Tisch, and I wanted to just, like, full blown, I wanted to go to fame. I wanted fame to exist, and I wanted that.
You want to live forever.
And I think, you know, whether it was fear or shitty SAT scores or friends going to Santa Cruz, like, it seemed comfortable to go there because I could just drive, you know, 7 hours up north and not be too far from home, because I was nervous to leave. But deep down, like, I wanted to be a performer. So I went to a school which weirdly didn't have like a, it had a theater department, but it didn't have like a theater.
Right.
So I kind of did everything else. And it was certainly, I mean, when I look back, there was definitely a darkness to it too. It wasn't all cute. And I wasn't like, you know, I had my times where I was into it, but there were some where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. But then like I took, you know, women's studies, and Angela Davis was my professor. And I was like, that's a hot note. I know.
That's amazing.
I know. And then the Rodney King happened, the riots happened, and we went marching, and I marched next to Angela. And I was like, I'm in college and I'm marching next to Angela Davis. But then I took the theater courses, and that led me to filmmaking, which I was kind of interested in. And then instead of the filmmaking, I went to the visual arts. So I ended up with photography. I am a visual maker person. Like, I'm still like a visual person.
That's crazy. Because
so
answer
your question,
not,
like, it's in there for sure. And I feel like, if anything, there is part of me that wants to like slow down the job part of what I do, of like clocking in at for a 5 a.m. call, or like your pickup is 4:38 a.m. You know, that thing. Like, yeah. I'm good now. I've done my time. I'm almost 50, so I'd like to stop doing that.
Oh,
and I do feel like there is a desire to make more things with my hands, if that's the way to describe it.
Interesting. Wait, yes. Esty, do you have a visual arts sort of, again, for visual arts? Because I, music, anything aural, performative, you know, dancers can see something and just do it.
Yeah.
Artists that can see something and draw it, that blows my fucking mind. I do not get it. And it doesn't, do you have that skill, Esty? Because I've never, it's very rare, Maya, that I actually hear performers also having this ability to do the visual art thing. Mm. And that's fascinating to me.
I do think that it's connected. I mean, Maya, you know my mom, and my mom was an art teacher.
Yep.
But she also loved music, and she was a performer too. I mean, my mom, you know, doesn't take a lot for her to start singing a song. I don't even have to ask her, and she's already on a stage with a microphone. But I do think that there is a correlation between all kind of things creative. Do I have the ability to see something and sketch it out? Absolutely not. When I see something, can I tell if I think it's like good or not? Like, do I have taste? I like to think so. I know what I like and what I don't. But do I have like the practicar? Like, can I? And also,
you've got that. You've got the eye, kid.
The eye.
I think I got the eye.
Yeah, you got the eye, kid. But the visual part I like. And also, like, I think I'm a little bit more of a drawer and a painter than a photographer.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you connect those to your ability as a performer? Because on this thing, I always try and boil things down to like what it is that ties it all
together
for you. For some people, it's selfish fulfillment. I'm not suggesting that's yours. Some people, it's trying to connect yourself to something great. Like, is there a thing that connects those two, or is it just like a fun hobby?
No, you're right. And in Esty's case too, I think it is a visual component. I mean,
yeah.
There's, you know, I've never, she's like, anytime I see Esty, I feel like she is, the way that she carries herself, the way that she sees things and makes things, puts together like a fucking sweater. She's wearing a fucking sweater and AirPods. But I'm serious. But there is a visual component to her that she can see that not everyone can.
Thank you, Maya.
But it's true. And I think it's incredibly natural. So it's probably just like second nature. And those things aren't really necessarily taught. Although you are from such a creative environment. So it's hard. Like, I don't even know if Loxa had.
Well, you are too, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And what about the dancing element? You're a dancer.
Oh, yeah. She's a private dancer.
Aren't you both dancers?
You know what? I think I'm more of a dancer than I am. I was when I was younger, and then for like, you know, classes and stuff. And then when I do it now, I'm like, I got this. 5, 6, 7, 8. And then it's not as cute as I thought it was.
I think I'm in that train as well.
I'm going to give you some pushback on that because you are an incredible dancer.
Wouldn't that be nice to have another dance, like another dance birthday party?
Just a dance floor, man. That sounds so nice.
Yes.
We will. It's just going to be a minute.
I think when we get home, we can have like a vaxxers only party, and we'll be able to cut a rug again. I said that I wanted to have like a Studio 54 party.
Guys, it's going to be the Soarin' 20s. You heard it here first. The Soarin' fucking 20s. Yeah. We're going to go nuts.
Dress like Bianca Jagger and Liza with a Z and all the Halston you can stomach.
You can ride your horse into my Studio 54 anytime, Bianca.
Oh, Bianca. Oh, she was a ledge. She's such a, talk about dressing well.
Gaga gooey.
I know.
That's the actual dictionary term, gaga gooey. I'm going to take this back in.
Yeah, let's bring it back because I know that Darren and I really, really want to talk to you about. There's so many things. And the thing that I think we obviously, you know, we're such big fans of you and just you in general, obviously. But you as an actress and as a producer and the things that you create, Darren and I are number one fan boys and girls.
Thank you, boys and girls.
Boys and girls are, I mean, hi, my name is Esty Heim and I'm the president of the Maya Rudolph Fan Club. And we've talked about this before and a little bit on Heim Time, but it really like, I have the most fun when I'm at princess shows. And for those of you that don't know, Maya is in this incredible Prince cover band.
I would say it's a tribute band, right? Isn't that the correct sort of like...
It's tribute. Yeah.
I guess you're right. That's a good point. I never know what to say, what to call it. I guess you're right.
I guess you're right. Not mutually exclusive, but tribute sounds more... I don't know. It's like...
It sounds like more class and less ass.
Yeah. That's what I was going for, man. It's got a little more integrity on it.
For those of you that are listening that haven't been to a princess show, Maya... Would you say you are one of two front women?
Yes.
Okay. And your counterpart's name is
Gretchen Liebrum, which brings me back to Santa Cruz, you guys.
Yes, you guys, that's where you guys met, right?
I was starting to say that in college it was kind of, I wasn't in love with everything I was doing, and it wasn't until I met my friend Gretchen in college, and she said, I'm starting a band. Do you want to be in it with me? And I was like, sure. And so we were the singers of a band called Super Sauce. And it was a nine-piece funk band, in case anyone's taking notes. And
Super Sauce.
It was like the highlight of my time there. Like, yeah, I was in college, and that was fine, and I was making friends. But we would play shows, and we would play at the Catalyst. They were like, oh... No Doubt was just here. Nirvana played here last week, and then we'd get to play.
I would love to go see Super Sauce circa.
Well, so yeah. Super Sauce was kind of like the precursor to Princess, our Prince tribute band, because after I did SNL, Gretchen said, I was moving back to LA, and she said, we should, because we had a mutual love for Prince, and she said, we should start a Prince cover band and call it Princess. That was literally what she said.
Genius.
Great.
Well
so
done.
It actually, when you say one of two, like we've always sung together. That's just kind of the way we sing. We harmonize together. And then it's kind of Super Sauce. So if you're seeing Princess, you're kind of seeing Super Sauce.
I have a question. Question about Super Sauce and question about the singing. Because I'm going to bring this back to, I know we kind of dove into photography a little bit, but you know, you were saying something that I really thought was interesting. You said you were helicoptering above all these other things. Like, it sounds like photography was just kind of an arbitrary choice to be somewhat near the things that were kind of calling to you.
So if
you're doing something like that, and then your girlfriend's like, okay, let's start a band, out of college, had you already considered, like, you know, just because your parents are both in music, so is music a hobby thing? Is it something that you go, oh, this is, like, is this what puts you into the rentals? Was it everything just was like a friend asking you to do something? Or at some point in college, were you like, okay, now that I'm done, I'm going to do music, or I'm going to go to the Groundlings? Like, at which point do you make that decision? Is it things like Gretchen saying, join my band, this should be fun? And then you go, okay, I guess I'm going to do this now. Or was it a very conscious decision?
A little bit of that, like a little bit of like people saying, hey, do you want to do this? And saying, yes.
That's how the rentals happened
because they needed someone to tour. And my friend Rachel Hayden had her own band, That Dog, and she couldn't tour. And so she said, call my friend Maya, because we grew up together. And she said, oh, she can play keyboards and harmonize, because that's all we ever did together when we were kids. We would just harmonize. It was three sisters.
The Hayden sisters.
Yeah. Except they were triplets.
Eerily similar, yeah.
Yeah. So we would just hang out and harmonize all the time. I'm not
so
even
fun.
Kidding. Which is, talking about it now, I do find it interesting. There was a lot of like, do you want to do this? And me saying, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Why the fuck not? Yeah.
Right.
But the only thing that I said I wanted to do was, after college, my dad said, what would you like to do? And I said, I want to be on Saturday Night Live. And he said, how are you going to do that? And I was like, that's a good question.
Good question.
Like, I kind of had to figure out, like, I think actually his words were, that's great. What are you going to do for money until you get there?
Good. Also a good question.
But I knew enough about the Groundlings being like a place to actually do sketch and improv. And I do find it fascinating now. I can be honest with myself and say, like, yeah, I wasn't really proactive in a lot of those decisions. It kind of took people to approach me, and I'd say, like, sure, yeah, I'll do it.
The improv of life, yes-anding life, as it were, if we're going to go.
Oh, boy, someone speaks the language.
Oh, someone hath fucked around with it a few times in my day.
Yeah, he did.
Maya, that was actually how this podcast came to be. I came to...
You're absolutely right. I yes
came to Darren and I was like, we should do a podcast together about like the origins of like the shit that makes people like tick and like the things that maybe they don't get to talk about as much on things
well,
like this.
Particularly people who are sort of multi-hyphenates that kind of dance right. between a lot of different things.
And then I wore him down and he agreed to do it. So such is life.
I was a shitty improv partner. I said no for a long time and the scene wasn't going very well until I said, okay, yes, let's go there. And here we are.
Well, you know the secret language of yes and.
Yes
and. Yes
and.
Yes
and. It's a very good life mantra in general. For those of you that are listening that don't know or have never done improv, yes anding is, I think, a much bigger philosophy in life of, you know, not no but no this, like seeing what happens if you yes and life in general. Sometimes you end up to be Maya Rudolph.
It keeps the conversation going, you know. It does. The karma.
I'm not gonna say no to anything ever again, probably.
I mean, there's a couple things you should say no to. I'm just gonna point those out just in,
yeah. there's a lot. A guy making a hymen joke, like no to that guy.
Yeah,
that's
maybe
not,
no
that's
to that.
Not fun.
But
there's ways to say no by yes anding. That's the thing. It's like you can. It's just being
no,
it's
but
being,
I'll do this instead.
Exactly. Yeah. It's being proactive. Excuse me. Constructive, not destructive, which is like I think the biggest
yes.
M-O. I was going to say M and O. M O.
M-O-N-O-P.
So I have a question about the singing and the performing things. So you were. So you go to Groundlings and you're cutting your teeth in improv, yes anding the shit out of life and out of working there.
Amen.
And you're also, were you still doing the band thing? Were you kind of doing the Rentals and Groundlings, or were you like, fuck this, no more music, no more touring?
The Rentals was actually like a genuine job. Like I got hired to go on the road. I'm in Ireland right now working and everyone here says, oh, is this your first time in Ireland? And you're like, I was like, yeah, it's my first time. And then the other day I went, wait a minute. I think we played here.
Tour bus
really?
Memories.
Of course. I mean, we, you know, I remember flying on Aer Lingus. Of course we
did. Aer Lingus. Can't forget
we
that.
We took a trip on Aer Lingus.
I'm sure we took
How about
a,
that
I'm
morning?
Sure we took a quick little trip to Aer.
Little jaunt.
Over on
little
Aer Lingus.
Trip.
Because we kept singing that song. You know I'm such a fool for you. You got me wrapped around your finger.
Yeah.
You have to fly Aer Lingus.
That's what would make me remember Ireland as well. I'd be like, oh yes, we were. I remember this song.
Yeah,
this.
I think I had a Guinness or something. But yeah, the Rentals was genuinely like I was hired because there wasn't really a band. Matt Sharp made up a band, but it was really just his project and he had a bunch of his friends play on it and then he needed a touring band. So I just did that right, like fresh out of the college womb. And then after that started doing Groundlings. And I'm such a greedy little monkey. I had always loved, I thought I was going to be a fashion designer, but I didn't really want, I'm not interested.
Wait, what? What? You can't just slide past that.
Well, I always wanted to make clothes and like do all that. And I didn't, but so when I was making my living, putting myself through improv and sketch comedy, I was a costume assistant. So I would do like
what
music Where? Videos and commercials and stuff with my friends that are costume designers. So I got to be around all that stuff because I fucking love clothes.
You and me both.
Well, this definitely ties to the visual artist thing. I mean, this is like there is a creativity to everything that you clearly have a knack for trying to maximize, whether with your hands or with your performing. That's interesting, man. I've never thought about that as far as like having, because for me, it's one or the other. But that's a totally
really
unfair way to look at life.
I can attest, Maya, the woman doth know how to dress.
Oh, of course. Oh, are you kidding me? Dude, as vice president of this fan club, I've noticed.
Well, I feel like I finally figured out that I can dress the way I want to for so many years. Like, I think I thought acting and like promoting things was like this job that you had to pretend to do. And I don't know about you, but like, I don't like sitting in a chair and having them like, you know, like when you're first starting out, you're like, people put makeup on you and right. they like your picture yeah. and you're like, I don't look like this. at all.
Right.
But I don't want to be the asshole who's like, hey, and, you know, and it takes a minute to finally go like, hey, this is not what I look like.
Right.
And I don't feel comfortable. I need to make it. So it took a very long time, I think, to get to that point. But I do.
There's a lot of infamous Haim photo shoots that I wish I could wipe from the internet.
Wait, where was I? Was it something I saw a video of, or was it a picture? But the thing on the cut. Did you see that yesterday? And it said, wow. My hair is so shiny. My hair looks so amazing from this towel. I either look like a member of Haim or I forgot the other part. I just went blind at the mention. It was like, I look like a member of Haim.
No.
And I was like, but it was the title of an article.
What?
For
no,
you?
Did
for
not.
You, Maya?
No.
Will you just send it to me?
It was about a hair drying towel, but it was talking about your fucking hair and how great it is
in a good light. Okay, good. That's what I wanted to clarify. It was in a good light. That's fucking rad.
I mean, we do have a lot of it. That's for damn sure. I have these weird little Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Oh, you girls have great hair. Esty.
We do have great hair.
Let's be real for a second.
No, you guys do have great hair. We do have great hair. Please send me that article. I'm like curious now.
I know. I want
immediately.
To find this.
No, there's this infamous photo shoot, at least infamous within like the Haim sisters, that we did really early on when we didn't really know how to, like you said, like just be like, maybe no.
That.
Don't really want that. The photographer, us with balloons.
There you go.
And the photo that they ended up putting on the internet, one of them was just the balloon in front of my face.
Yeah, that's that sounds
like she doesn't look. She's not really making the cut, but we can't take her out of the shot.
No, it's more about the photographer. It's like how so many, you know, articles are really. Although I do think things are changing, because I do think a lot of this snarkiness that was in journalism might be changing because of COVID. It's like how articles were, you know, tearing into creatives by journalists because it was about the journalist and like about the journalist like coming off as like better than or smarter or more powerful.
Totally.
Like it had nothing to do with the person's music or movie or creative thing that they were making. So I think the balloon was about the photographer.
Guys, let's not forget those journalists were all failed musicians. So they got a real axe to grind. With you guys.
That too.
That is the case in a lot of cases.
It is. It is. But I think this, not to bring it back to photography, I wish you were the one taking the photo because I know you wouldn't have made me. He literally was like, I remember like it was yesterday. He was like, Loa. Loa.
Oh, no.
All right, Loa. Maya, I swear on the Torah. So they ended up like publishing like three photos, and then
I'm gonna look this photo up as soon as
just look up Haim balloons. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some.
Is your face completely obscured, or is it augmented like with a sort of like concave? Like you look like you have a fatter face, you know, like because it's amplified by the magnification of the balloon.
No, it basically just like I don't know if the one that completely obscures my face is still on the internet.
This photographer lost me at balloons because when he asked him to go buy the balloons, I lost interest.
But like, again, it's kind of like what you said. Like my sisters and I didn't really have the wherewithal at the time to just be like, this isn't really gelling with, you know, us in general. I think we just were kind of like taught at the time, at least, just like go with the flow. Like you don't want people to think that you're like difficult.
Absolutely.
Like blah 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 blah, and we were just like, all right, well,
I mean,
I know,
especially as a lady who like, you know, gets their face painted for work, like because I don't really wear a lot of makeup or ever in life. Like when I first started at SNL, you know, random people would do your makeup and like they don't, and they'll say like, "What do you like?" And I'm like, "What? I don't know."
Same.
But then I found like in terms of like self-care or like protecting yourself, I found that when I was made in a way that I felt like I don't look at myself, I was so unhappy that I couldn't hide it. Or then someone would do your hair and you look like a fucking auntie going to church, and they were, and I was like, it's great. Yes. I just wanted to get out of the chair, you know, and I just didn't want to have that uncomfortable altercation. And like, you just get to a point where you finally figure out how to speak in a way that helps you. Everybody's path is different, I guess, with this stuff, but it took me a very, very long time because deep down, I was not feeling like, I was feeling like there were pictures of me out in the world that did not resemble me or reflect anything to do with me. But yes. I thought it was like, this is a job. You do your job.
And I have to, 100%. I've had experienced this as well. And I, you know, I think I particularly, this is a very, I'll say tricky journey for especially young women that get put in a specific place of what needs to be the version of themselves in the media. Mm-hmm. But on a less gender specific tip, I also had to go through this where because for all of us having studied anything to perform in whatever capacity, there's no part where it's like, okay, and here's how to look good in magazines. You have no fucking clue. Especially, it sounds like the three of us are like pleasers and want to make sure we're not being difficult and trying to be as tactful and diplomatic and grateful and, you know, and not as we don't want to ruffle anyone's feathers. There's so many times where I see shit where it's like, I also had to learn the vocabulary of and the decorum of how to say a thing and like, oh, can I not do this thing with my hair? Because at what fucking point would I have learned that unless I had the proverbial balloon photo shoot? Have that. Yeah. You have no fucking clue. Like, who tells you that? And how do you represent yourself? Because that person is not you. So how do you build like your avatar in this other universe? How is that doll supposed to be dressed? It's like, I don't know.
I remember when Bridesmaids was coming out, I got a call saying they're offering like, I forgot what it was called, but it was like, would you like to have a little bit of like a seminar in like how to do publicity? Because I wasn't really like that familiar. And SNL has a publicist. We had a publicist, but SNL, you don't really get, I mean, things I do think are different at the show now. But when I was there, like, we were just like kids on the show. Like, no one fucked with, like, we weren't that exciting to be like, things have really changed and kids are like the kids. What am I saying? Hi, kids are really on. Those kids are on more shows, but it's different. It's definitely different now. So we just didn't do that much like press and stuff like that, but it's a different world now. And it took me years to get to the point where I would feel comfortable going on a talk show. I mean, years. I was so bad at it. I think I remember kind of like developing, when you say avatar, like, I think I kind of remember going like, in order to take these photos, because Lord knows I was not born a model, and like do these talk shows where I think you're expected to be like on and stuff. I kind of remember when I thought, like, I'm going to develop a persona that's like a protective layer. That's not really me, but that's like the me that I can live with going out, putting out there, but that is not revealing who I am. Because I couldn't, like, I would go and then people would be like, and your family, and you're like, and your mom, and you're this. And I was like, and I felt like I was going to barf when I got home. Like, just, I felt so naked and so exposed. And I hated it so much. And then I realized, like, oh, I don't have to do that. I'm going to lie a little bit by, like, kind of yes-anding in a lot of ways. Like, just kind of, like, making it a little bit more fun and funny and not really, like, being super naked publicly because I couldn't stomach it.
Yes.
I am totally with you. There is a version of ourselves that there's you as you know you. Then there is the you that other people think they know you. And they have everything to do with each other and nothing to do with each other. And it's a strange thing because you want to honor the version of the superhero version that they think you are. You want to step up to that plate and you want to, like, you know, give them a good time, give them the good show. But it is strange when they come in conflict. And where is that compromise of still maintaining your own sense of self with that person? And what's really weird is sometimes I've found times where I've veered more towards myself in an effort to preserve that who I really think I am. And it's not to the liking of the version that people wish they saw. And I go, wait, who's right here? What am I supposed to do? And it's a tough one.
Well, then you also feel like you've betrayed yourself and you're like, oh, I'll never do that again. You know, like,
Right.
Right.
You go out of your way like, oh, would you like me to do this? Like, oh, no, you wouldn't. You wouldn't like me
to do this. You wouldn't. Okay, sorry. I didn't want to anyway. I didn't want to. Sorry. I was just sort of spitballing. Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
You have to like backpedal. That's such, yeah, it's a weird one. But if I may say so, as a fan and us not knowing each other particularly well, I this version of you coming out and talk show Maya Rudolph, I'm a fan. She seems very lovely, very genuine. You
I'm
know?
A fan of every facet of Maya Rudolph.
She's a nice lady, yeah. And I like her. She's a friend, like, she's all a friend the facets. Of mine. But I definitely, it was a little bit of a trial and error, for sure. And I think also just like comes with...
it's a huge learning curve.
Guys, it comes with age, guys.
Yeah. Well, it's experience. And like you also, the trial and error of, I mean, like, cause no, who gets to fucking, like, who gets training in this? Like, if you go to Juilliard, if you're some fucking hotshot actor kid, there's no like senior year class of like, and here's how to deal with the press line.
Isn't that weird? I mean, I'm sure someone has asked you more than 1 million times, like, so how do you get into it? Or like, how did you start? And you realize like, oh, you're just fucking making it up as you go along until
do it.
You
yeah.
get there. Like, there's no, I don't know. It's so, it's such a made up job.
I know.
Yeah, it's all pretend. It's all fucking pretend.
I know.
It's wild. I know. And I always feel bad for the folks that don't, like, it's strange to me that, you know, someone like, I don't know, fucking like Daniel Day-Lewis, right? Like one of the greatest living like performers, that at some point that this guy that has this gift from like from on high has to also be expected to show up and be good at like kissing babies and passing out cigars. Right. I'm like, that's not fair. If Picasso was alive, I wouldn't be like, oh, dude, you better be really good at Celebrity Jeopardy when you go on. It's like, no, he's a fucking artist.
See, therein lies the rub. He was smart and he was like, I'm not going to fucking do that. And I want to say that too,
right.
But I'll never be able to say that. I'll never be that fucking cool. And
it's
also,
a different thing.
I'm a people pleaser. So you want me to do it? I'll do it. And I'll do it in a way that I can stomach. Because the first times I started saying yes to doing things, they hurt my soul and shattered my aww, dreams. And it was
really
painful. And it took a minute to like figure out, okay, this is how I can do this and be able to like
right, recalibrate.
Yeah, and be okay.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SMOOTH at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SMOOTH. Enjoy!
Well, so I'm going to bring it to now because I know why you're in Ireland, and this occurred to me right before you, when Sloan was on. She's like, you're in Ireland. I was like, oh my God. Because about very early in the pandemic, actually, so I was in New York, I was doing a play, and before things got shut down, we had a couple days where everybody was kind of uncertain before I came back to Los Angeles. And I had dinner with my good buddy, Adam Shankman.
Oh.
And Adam Shankman was, we were talking about, he knows I'm a big Enchanted fan. I was that dude in college that like went to a midnight screening of the new Disney movie only to find out that of course there's no midnight screening. You're like, who are you? This is a children's movie. Come back at 11 a.m. How are you an adult man coming at midnight? What's wrong
Darren,
with you?
That's so cute.
So me and my buddies
that's
came back
so
the next
cute.
Day. So I love that movie. Big, big fan of the franchise.
Me too.
Or I guess now to be franchise. And I was asking about casting, not because I'm an actor, but because I'm a fan. And when your name came up, I was just like, fuck, yes, yes. Everything about that, yes, 1,000 times yes. Because she's a singer, she's a comedian, she's got all the chops to make this work. And if she does not get cast... just between us girls, I remember there were other names being mentioned. I was like, no, fuck that. Absolutely not.
When we get off the Zoom, I'm going to get those names, baby.
Yeah, you get those names.
Let me write it down.
Call up Shank.
We're going to pick them off. They're not allowed on the show.
Mr. Shankman.
But I remember just thinking,
how cool this would be. And if I'm being real honest, I don't think they were Adam's names. They were the dudes in the suits.
That's why I want to hear them. Have you ever? Isn't it fascinating?
I remember
like when you find out, like, when you were gonna do something, and then you see the person that did it, and you're like, that's the world that they see me in. That's so fucking weird.
Oh, well, I think you might be compliment. I don't remember who it was, but I think it was people were like wildly different, which is always nice, because then you're like, okay, there's not clearly a
that's true, I guess,
a type.
But I'm so insecure. I'm like, am I like that person? Really?
Well, clearly you're not, because you got it, and fuck those other people. Nice. So I'm so glad that you're shooting this movie. I don't know if you're in the middle of it or you're finished or whatever.
I just started. I mean, I just came out of a very heavy quarantine. The quarantine here is no joke. So you got to quarantine for a very long time, and then you walk outside and it's the most magical place where
it's so beautiful.
All dairy is fresh and your bread doesn't go, your bread goes bad after 3 days because it's so damn fresh.
Because it's so good, yeah.
It's shocking. And everyone is nice. Like, okay, they said everyone's nice. And I was like, I get it. And I was like, oh no, but everyone is nice. Like, it's, they're kind and they're sweet and they're thoughtful. And
the Irish are deliriously heartwarming. That's like their national legacy.
Also, like right now, this time of the year, the sun isn't going down. I sent you that video, Esty, but it was like 9:30 or 10 at night, and it was just like that beautiful.
Yeah, you're up there. Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so pretty.
It's the same thing here. It's wild, and it really kind of messes me up.
Yeah, it messes you up. Plus,
it messes me up in the sense that, like, I am in no way, shape, or form. Like, as a 35-year-old woman now, like, I don't potty. Like, partying is, like, not really my thing. However, in London, because the sun literally doesn't go down, people are just going. So, like, and there's no stop button. Like, people just want to keep going. And I think it's also a byproduct of the fact that there's been a pandemic and that things are opening up in London.
Well, it's a bank holiday here this weekend, and I heard that, like, in Dublin over the weekend, people had flooded the streets so heavily that they were being pushed away with batons. And I said that to the kids, and they were like, "Batons? You mean sticks?
Like twirl it?
Yeah,
go with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, guys.
They're all a bunch of conductors. The police force is actually just these maestros magic them away. Zoinks, Scoob.
I wish I was in Ireland with you. That sounds like a dream.
I know we can't like talk about the movie, but for our listeners, I was referencing the sequel to Enchanted, which is Adam Shankman is directing. And we're not going to talk about the party or anything that you're doing on it. But because the first one was a musical, I'm just going to assume and hope and make no concrete aspersions, but just putting out of the universe that if we're lucky, we get to hear you sing in this movie. You don't have to confirm or deny that.
That would be very cool.
That would be very cool. And that would tie together a lot of the other things we're talking about. You get to like sing and perform. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you're doing some photography work in it. I don't know.
I'm actually drawing all the costumes. I get to draw.
That would be the ultimate everything, right?
That would be cool. I actually did have these fantasies in quarantine that, you know, my family would like band together and like all my children would become musicians, like their Haim cousins, and that we would be like a family where we like make movies. And then, you know, I like make the costumes Coppola's wife would go on, you know, on location with him, and she was the set photographer. I was like, maybe I'll do that one day.
Oh,
that's awesome. I didn't know that. That's sweet.
Although I really kind of think that it would be fun. I like, I don't know, I like to speak a language here and there. I'm fancy myself a linguist. So I was like, well, if the boy from the valley needs to go to another country and like speak the language, I'll be happy to like be his interpreter.
I mean, wait, where would you want to go?
Yeah,
Maya?
I was going to say, you have a knack. I think we're all musical ear people here. So accents and like character sounds and languages do come naturally to, I think, probably all three of us.
Do you speak language? Do you speak multiple languages?
I do. Esty, you do too, right?
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, you've got that. Yeah, we've got a couple languages between all of us.
What do you guys speak?
Darren speaks Japanese.
Io parlo italiano. Oh. Je parle français.
Nihongo hanashimasu.
Oh, wakarimasu.
Wakarimasu ne. Hai, hai, chotto muzukashi. Demo, I don't know. I'll just say chotto. Chotto sukoshi.
That was very good.
Thank you. It's a fun copy. That was my quarantine project, was learning languages. But that's something that always comes naturally to me because of the music. I don't just, it's a language thing. It's like I sucked in school. Languages, yeah. Great. Easy. Love languages.
How did you study them? Did you use an app or a human?
This is such a longer conversation. And because you are a guest of honor, I don't want to open up too much because I know myself and I know I'll talk too much. But let's just say I did a variety of things. I've taught myself a few different languages and I have a whole methodology of like, I always go with a certain app first that I actually do because people usually buy them, do it for 2 days and then go, that was fun. They're done.
And then they give up. Yeah.
It's like a workout program or a diet. It's like they buy it to feel good and they don't actually fucking do it. So I actually do it. Then I get a tutor and then I immerse myself hardcore. That's phone is in that language. Yeah. It's a big to do, but I highly recommend it.
I'm so impressed. And I'm so glad I asked you that question because most people don't do that.
Well, I did. And that's a whole other, we'll talk about it in our post-interview, sort of exit interview. But yeah, there's,
it's, I want to hear Maya speak a different language. What Maya,
that's what
you...
I was going to say. What's your language? What do you want to do?
Yeah.
J'étudiais français en l'école et j'habitais avec une famille en France. And then...
So a famille en France, maintenant?
No. When I was in high school.
Oh, very cool.
See how I gave up there?
Yeah.
And then... my stepmom's Japanese, so I speak very, very limited amount of Japanese. So I understood what you said.
I speak a little, that's it. My wife is the one that's like really talented at it.
Well, here's the problem is that I studied Japanese in college because I thought like, oh, I should really learn this language because I only really spoke restaurant Japanese growing up. Or like when we went to Tokyo when I was 14, I always got headaches. And so my stepmom taught me how to say, Zutsugashimasu.
Yeah.
Just like in case I was somewhere and I had a headache and I needed to tell somebody. But because it's such a different language, as you know, and it's not a romance language, like you can't just like, it's almost the way that Yoda speaks, right? Like hungry.
I always say that. Yes. It's syntactically Yoda speak. If people don't understand how syntax works, the verbs last. Yes.
If you're not speaking it on a daily basis, if you're not immersing yourself, if you're not there, it's gone. So I only have left, like I say, restaurant Japanese.
This brings up a really interesting thing that I'm going to try and tie to everything as seems to be my sort of general
talent
thing that I like to do. That's the thing I do, is I like to tie it all together. But the reason why I love languages, and Essie, this is going to come up a lot, because, you know, performing, photography, drawing, designing, playing, all of it, it's a language. And there is a through line to, there are natural laws and rules and regulations that kind of make things work or not work. And what I love about, I've learned a lot of languages, I teach languages, what I love particularly about Japanese is how quickly you realize that language itself, communication itself, is completely abstract and arbitrary. That there is no one way to say anything. So when people go, oh, how do I say this in English in Japanese? I'm like, all right, I'm gonna stop you right there. You don't say it in English in Japanese. You just say it in Japanese. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that because what's fun about communicating is that you can choose your own, like everything has its own like pathway. There's no like things are not black and white. We don't live in a sort of like concrete universe of like absolutes. Things are very abstract and amorphous, and I love that. You know,
it's like when you're in another country and someone tells a joke and you're like, why is that funny? You know, it's like,
oh yeah,
and it's like you called somebody an asshole. It's like, well, we don't really call people assholes here. It's like, you don't, you know, it's something, you can't tell a joke in another language and have the same,
oh yeah,
you can't give them a pill that gives them thousands of years of historical and social context,
exactly,
that can inform why this joke. Exactly. And that's what language and music and culture is tied to. It's thousands of years of cultural shit that like is baked into the cake of a language. Like there are things in Japanese that they're funny to us because we're not Japanese, but they exist because of systems that have been around in Japan forever, you know? And so, I don't know. Again, this is a huge Pandora's box that I could get
into. I love it so much. By the way, I didn't know until I got to Ireland that Irish is a language.
Is a language.
Oh, yeah. On the signs. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Irish is nuts.
Talk about Yoda. That is some, like, There's no correlation.
There's nothing. And it's, yeah, like, so you go to Spain or something and you see, like, romance languages where you're like, oh, okay, like, I know what the baño is. That makes sense.
Yes.
Don't we all? It's basic knowledge. But when you go to, like, Ireland, it's like, all right, restrooms, and underneath it, it says, and you're like, oh, shit.
And it has an accent over it. It's,
oh, yeah.
There's a sign for, like, you know, picking up dog shit there on the in the neighborhood. It says, mind the poo.
Right.
But then it's also like, or no, it says, bin the poo. Which is even cuter. But then it's got the Irish over it, and it's like cockles ein oob.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. Nowhere near it. Nowhere near, but so
damn. No idea.
You know what else is so beautiful other than 1 million other things here? The birds sound fake. I'm just going to start with that. But
no,
some of the names.
True. Like cartoon birds, yeah.
Oh, they sound like fake. There's magpies. I'm looking at one right now outside. It's like this beautiful, huge black bird with white on it. And it sounds like someone took an animatronic like bird out of Disneyland and was like, I'm going to put this out your window. Yeah, like
100%. Yeah.
But the names, some of the people's names, I was talking to someone whose daughter's name is Aoife, and it's spelled A-O-I-F-E.
Yeah, Celtic, yeah, in the Irish.
It's like Eve. Yeah. It's like the name Eve. It's Aoife.
Aoife.
Yeah.
Or Orla. Aoife. Or Ona. Una.
Yeah, and they all have like 9 letters that aren't pronounced in it. Yeah, I love that.
There was somebody who was saying that their last name was like T-B-H. B-H. What?
And you probably pronounce it like Gnamaho or something like that. Something with none of those letters.
Yeah, there's an area near us called Dunleary.
Uh-huh.
So I've been looking for it because I was like, well, Dunlegare is down the street.
And that's how they spell it.
Dunleary.
I have to give a side note. One of my favorite conspiracy theories early on in the pandemic for us staying home, this is like the dumbest shit ever, was that... the government's trying to put us inside so they can change the batteries in the birds.
Oh, yeah. Because pigeons are robots.
Who said that?
It's like a dumb internet meme.
It's a conspiracy
joke that coronavirus was just a ruse to get us to stay inside so the government could change the batteries
on the birds.
All the birds. So when you're like, oh, these magpies look like animatronic Disneyland birds, I'm like, maybe they are. Maybe they fucking are.
Those might be.
Those could be, yeah.
What are the pigeons do that need batteries? Are they spies?
Yes, like they're
probably, who knows?
They have cameras in their eyes, and that's how the government looks after. I mean, this is like this conspiracy theory. I was also fascinated with, Darren. Thank you for bringing it up.
I think it's adorable
because the big takeaway was the big question they would ask people that were like, "Well, that's not true." Was, well, when have you seen a baby pigeon?
They're not ready for the streets, man.
Where are they?
They got to hide away in those.
Where are the baby pigeons?
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know. I mean,
there's only adult pigeons. They only got one pigeon model.
Where's the camera? Like,
in their eyes?
But their eyes don't meet you. It's their butthole. Like, is it in their butthole? Like,
yeah, that'd be a better. Yeah, you're right. That's a better vantage point.
You're
like,
right.
If you're gonna put a camera somewhere, I think we've given more dignity to this theory than it deserves.
But you're right about the baby pigeon. I'm not going to lie. I don't know that I've seen one.
I'd get nervous.
I've never seen a baby pigeon.
I'm like, what are you doing here? This is not correct. You got to get back.
Now I'm on board.
Yeah. This makes a lot of sense to me. I'm going to tell all my friends.
Maya, this is actually why we brought you on this podcast, was to get you on our side.
That's the whole purpose of this podcast. I have a question for you, which I'm sure you've both talked about because you're obviously highly intelligent, creative people, is why do you think there is a symbiotic
circle of life,
a connection between comedians and musicians?
Yes, 1000%. But I,
why?
Esty, you can go off on this. I have a whole theory on this. I
cannot wait to hear your theory.
I think they're of the same beast for a variety of reasons. Because comedy is music. It's timing, cadence, dynamics. I'm thinking of all your colleagues from SNL, Dana Carvey, who was I the class before I realized, but Armisen's a great example. Yourself, Maya. I think there's a lot of people who who are engrossed in
Blues
music.
Brothers.
Blues Brothers. I mean, this. I named like three, of like four of like a gajillion, but like
Gilda Radner.
Gilda's a great example. You have all these people that have a musical wiring.
Steve Martin,
for fuck's sake.
Martin Short.
There's tons and tons and tons of people that have this ability, and they are absolutely related. I think that's it's no mystery to me when you find out some really funny person has a huge musical ability, because they are, it's music. You're threading the needle of a musical delivery, you know?
Journey.
And so I think they're absolutely like part of the same coin.
I love it. I think it's one of those fascinating things also that like all musicians love Spinal Tap, which by the way, who doesn't love Spinal Tap? Oh, yeah.
Of course.
If they don't love Spinal Tap, they're a fucking moron, but I love when musicians quote funny things because they have very good taste in funny things.
Isn't there some adage of like all comedians want to be rock stars, all rock stars want to be... No. Comedians want to be actors, actors want to be rock stars, and rock stars want to be comedians. Or is there some kind of like circle of desire? Where
there is a triangle there.
Yeah, I forget what... I may have misquoted that. I heard that
the
from
somebody. The triangle of life.
Yeah. The Simba...
It is a triangle of life.
The Symbiotic.
Simba...
No, was that too? Was
I
that,
do think.
Was a reach?
I do think. Also, in general, I think some of the most like loved, iconic artists of all time were funny.
100%.
I think you look at the Beatles and like their early interviews,
exactly.
And like part of the reason I think they were so loved. I mean, the music was great, but I think also their personalities.
They're fucking funny ass kids. Yeah, like
they're funny, and they didn't take themselves seriously, and I think. You know, although, again, this goes back to British boys being funny. I was going to say, like, you know, like the Mick Jaggers of the world who were just kind of like had like swagger and confidence, but also were like in interviews were just really funny and on stage had jokes.
Dude, I'll give you the OG funny British boy who is a fantastic musician and a wonderful songwriter and one of my favorite performers of all time. Fucking Charlie Chaplin. You know, I mean.
Oh, Charlie Chaplin.
Major funny man, songwriter of Smile Though Your Heart Is Aching, Smile
I
Even Though It's Aching.
Straight to Elton John.
Nope, I skipped. I was a misdirect.
By the way, have you guys watched 1971 yet?
No.
No.
That's what you need to do tonight.
Wait, I don't even know what that is. What am I looking up?
It's a new Apple series.
New Apple series, yeah.
And we picked it up when we got here, and it's like a 6 or 8-parter. When you said Mick Jagger, I was like, ding, because it's only footage, but people are being interviewed. So you hear the interviews, but it's like them and, you know, the Stones in the south of France. It's everything taking place in 1971. John and Yoko.
Yeah,
David
the year
Bowie.
That changed music. The year everything music changed, right? That's
the year the music changed everything. David Bowie playing Glastonbury at 5 o'clock in the morning, and everyone is like waking up or asleep. You need to watch it.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Wait, is this a Gary Getzman original? Is this what he was
talking about? No, it should be. But it's not. It's an Apple.
Is it a few episodes or is it just like one big chunk?
No, it's like 6 or 8. We spent.
Damn.
I can't wait.
Get in your cozies. Get in your onesie and put it on.
I'm in it, bro. I'm already.
Thank you
I'm going
for
straight from
thank
here
you
there.
For telling me, because I've had nothing to watch and I feel like I've burned.
What are you talking about?
Everything.
You have the entire catalog of all recorded media at the touch of a button.
But that's what I have nothing. I've Darren, you know this about me. I watch everything. It just takes the person to tell me what
I know.
To watch,
you're right.
And then I watch it in one sitting.
No, it's
I'll
true.
Watch
you're
it. I'll
watch
anything.
This.
Yeah, we do need a guru, a guide.
There's some good Ike and Tina footage of Tina when you're like,
oh, that documentary fucked me up.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't watch it yet. See,
okay, that'll be our trade. We'll do 1971.
That's a trade.
You
should
Tina.
Watch that.
I think a lot of us music nerds, like, we know like a lot of the story, the good, bad, and the ugly of Tina's story. And they put it together in this really beautiful kind of like, almost like a sign-off for her. You could tell that she did this as like,
that's
look,
what it felt like.
I've talked about that shit in my life a lot. Here's the last time I'm going to do it. Here's some extra shit. By the way, I'm one of the coolest women alive. And peace. That's
one of the most talented ever.
It's amazing.
Literally. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's a good one. I feel like we've taken a lot of your time, Maya. So
You guys have perfectly timed because they just came home with Indian food, so I'm going to eat dinner.
Go eat your dinner.
Yay!
If there's, I have one last question. We'll try and answer it quickly. If you had, with all the things that you're doing and all the things that you can do, you mentioned, you know, wanting to, jokingly saying, I want to like draw costumes for my family, band, movie, theater company, or whatever you call it. Is there a thing that you're like, you know what? I really want to make sure I haven't done this yet. And this is the next thing that I'd love to do. In an ideal world, if you had your druthers, maybe it is the family band thing. I don't know. But what's the next thing?
I think
thing?
It should be the family band.
What's the thing you would like to do?
I'm so nervous about making real music. It's very scary to me because I feel less like a musician and more like a musical person, in that I don't, to me, like singing in a voice that's my voice, as opposed to like imitating someone else's voice, that makes sense,
right?
Is
yes,
probably the most terrifying frontier that I would like to sort of conquer. And I don't even know if that means that I'm like, I'm gonna, my album drops in 2040, y'all, or it's like, you know, just getting a chance to find out what my singing voice sounds like. As you know, that sounds, that's me.
Yeah, no, I get like, that.
Like, I mean, music, I think, is just overwhelmingly emotional to me. But I love it, and I love to sing. And more than anything, I love to sing with other people because I love to harmonize. Like, that's my...
Yeah.
I realize that...
And you're so good at it.
Well, I realize that's more my instrument. Like, I don't really play that much of an instrument. I play keyboards, but I'm not like, a good piano player. My instrument is singing with another person.
You blend. I think that tracks with your career of like you can lift other people up with them. I mean, that's the sort of basis of improv. That's a lot of the a lot of the great ensembles that you've been part of in the past. You know, you're adding the missing third, the missing fifth, the seventh. Like, you're adding the harmony of this sort of collective piece, and you've done that so wonderfully throughout your career that makes sense that you would say, I am good at harmonizing. Because I think if you look at harmonizing as a metaphor for like making shit work with a group, with all the shit that you've done, like that fucking makes sense. But it does pose an interesting question of like, what does my singular note sound like?
My voice sound like.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I hope you
that
find
so
it.
So thoughtful that you said that. I feel very seen.
Yeah, I get it. That's, I mean, as a massive fan, like you've done that. And by the way, late congratulations. I couldn't believe that the first Emmy was for Connie, but much deserved.
Thanks,
much
homie.
Deserved. Big, big, big mouth fan over here, this household. We love Connie. We
big
can't
ups.
take a bubble bath without quoting you.
She dirty. She dirty and hairy.
We love Connie.
She's a good lady. She's a good hairy lady. Thank
aww.
You, Darren.
Congrats
You're so
on that.
Funny. Thank you. I know. It's nice. It's like, and it was nice to get it in COVID because I didn't have to go anywhere or get dressed up. But also, like, it is nice to be acknowledged in sometimes in that way. I was like, oh shit, I just won. Something
yeah.
like that feels good to win. Like, I don't win shit.
Yeah. Esty, cool. She got
Listen,
two, by the way.
Same.
It wasn't just Connie. It was also for SNL, I think.
I didn't get a Brit, though. I didn't get a Brit award.
I don't have a Brit, but that's why
Listen,
we have Esty.
This was my first foyer into the journey of winning. I haven't won anything before. So this was a new feeling.
Well, I feel like I got to say all the praise and get all the questions from my. It's such a pleasure to get to talk to you as such an admirer and somebody that kind of tries to navigate a lot of the same things you've been able to navigate so brilliantly. It's truly a joy to talk to you. I'm just such a massive fan. Thank you for everything that you've done.
Thank you. This was such a rich and delicious conversation with such talented humans that it's like, it's really fun to. I felt like
thank
it's
you,
a
Maya.
Fucking hand, easy to bounce in. I christened this show a hit.
Yes,
you, really,
you did.
Thank you.
Oh, your mouth to God's ears.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
That was our interview with Maya Rudolph. It could have gone on for hours and hours and hours. I was so excited to be able to say anything to her. I think I was probably rambling a little more than I would have wanted simply because I was so excited to have an audience with her. So thank you, Esty,
for teeing
that up.
You actually kept your cool. You really kept your cool on that one, Darren.
Thank you. I'd like to think I did as well. But again, I could talk for a while.
That was our first interview in the can.
In the can, we did it. There were things that we didn't do this episode that we talked about in our first episode. We wanted to do segments. We had this thing called Breakfast Epiphanies that we could still do, but I really wanted to get in the meat potatoes of having a guest, and someone as amazing as Maya really deserved just kind of carving as much time out for that as possible. So, you know, 100%. We're still figuring this out as we go along, so we might do one of those segments next time. But
our listeners are going to grow with us.
Pretty good about that.
They're going to grow with us.
That's the thing we do, is we grow together.
We grow. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to Darren Criss, my partner in crime, the Samson to my Delilah, the Abbott to my Costello. I love you. That was so much fun. I can't wait to do this, you know, every week. I look forward to it. More interviews, more friendships to be made. And I'm so happy that we get to do this together. And I hope everyone had as much fun as we did. Let's keep it up.
That Thing I Do is a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios.
If you like the show, which I know you do, please be sure to like us, follow us, and leave a glowing review.
Thank you for listening to our show. We'll see you next time.